Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very happy to be here tonight and to talk to you, talk to Bufora. Bufora, with its member societies throughout the British Isles, is doing wonderful work in helping to bring about a recognition of what is going on in our skies and of the UFO. I should like to pay tribute to all the work that Bufora is doing. And it is a work, I know, because from my own experience in the flying saucer field, I know that once the saucer bug gets you, then you might as well realize that you've had it. You're up half the night answering letters and doing various jobs. Some of your former social friends give you up as hopeless. However, in life, there's often a compensating factor, and the flying saucer field is no exception. My interest in this subject has made me literally hundreds of friends all over the world. Most of them I've never personally met. But after exchanging many letters with them, I feel that I know some of them very well indeed, and that they are very fine people. Now, before I get down to my talk tonight, I should like to start by asking you all a very personal question. There is in the world today a club. It is a very unofficial one. It is no longer very exclusive. Its members now run into the millions all over the world. It has no president, no chairman, no secretary, no subscriptions or fees, and no rules. There is only one qualification for membership. You have to have seen a flying saucer. Now, I would very much like to know how many people in this hall tonight have joined that club. Please, will those of you who have seen a flying saucer raise up your hands? That's quite a response, isn't it, Nigel? Have a look around. Do you have sighting reports from all those people? Well, that's pretty good. In fact, it's wonderful. I think that those saucers are frequently seen by the world public at large. On the whole, people genuinely interested in our subject are inclined to look up more, and so the law of average maybe will work in their favour. I should also like to state here and now, and this is a personal opinion, and it may sound possibly, I don't know, a little silly, but I think that the very act of looking up does something for you. I really think that the act of looking up does something for us spiritually, mentally, and physically. Obviously, we must not look up all the time in crowded streets. We'd be a menace. But wherever there are open spaces, we should always try and look up. Now, the flying saucers are not just craft that come from other spheres, although that in itself is very wonderful. They represent something far more. A new dimension in our thinking. Hundreds of years ago, people lived in small villages, and communication with what to them was the outside world was a rare event. That would be the next village or settlement. Then gradually, people moved outward to meet their neighbors, and great migrations began to take place. Mankind's horizons were being widened. Eventually, the old idea that the earth was flat became out of date as voyagers upon its surface, upon its apparently endless oceans, proved it to be a mighty sphere, even after the invention and development of telescopic instruments. The sky remained a flattened canopy, or an even flatter photographic print. To Earthman, as far as his own personal reality concerning it could go. Now that he is beginning to venture out upon the greater ocean of space, and as he listens to the electronic voices of the probes he sends out farther than he himself can go at present, the reality of this third dimension is growing stronger. His exploration of space has forced him to raise his eyes and to look outward and upwards into the universe that is, in fact, his true home. It is, of course, just as important to look within. A fully balanced person looks both within and without. Anyway, the information available now about this enormous universe in which we live is truly staggering and amazing. Astronomers tell us that there are 100,000 million stars, million suns, in our galaxy alone. But that is not all. They go further and inform us that at least 100,000 million other galaxies are stretching away in all directions. In addition to that, it is now beginning to become accepted that there are numerous invisible universes in which all this vastness is repeated. As I wrote in my last book, The Flying Saucer Story, one thing is quite clear. The creator of it all certainly didn't have a chicken coop in mind when he created it. Surely there's one planet in the whole of this incredibly vast cosmos could not be the only one to contain intelligent life. That would make a mockery of creation. Top-ranking scientists today agree with the idea of an inhabited universe. Sir Bernard Lovell, director of the Jodrell Bank Radio Telescope, Professor Fred Hoyle, Plumian Professor of Astronomy at Cambridge University, the doyen of American astronomers, Dr. Harlow Shapley, and incidentally, the distinguished American, Dr. Carl Sagan, have all stated that millions of planets in our Milky Way galaxy may well be inhabited. If we assume that the Earth is only an average planet, then there must be millions of planets in our galaxy as Dr. Shapley has also pointed out, with far, far more advanced technologies than our own. I have often written that our highly prized technology has only been acquired within the last 200 years. Before that, we were content to rely for hundreds of years upon the horse and the wheel. When you think of the wonders we have achieved in just about 200 years, imagine what civilizations on other planets in the galaxy, either in the galaxy, may have achieved in 1,000 or 10,000 or even 100,000 years. It is a tremendous and awesome thought. So the idea that people could come here from other planets, either from inside or outside our solar system, or perhaps from invisible realms, is not particularly astonishing. When you think about this in that way, it would seem more incredible if they could not do so. Up to quite recently, some people have said that we ourselves might be able to reach our moon and Mars, but journeys to the stars would be beyond the scope of humanity because of the vast distances involved. They maintained that the ultimate speed was approximately 180,000 miles a second, the speed of light. Even traveling at that speed, if it was possible, the critics stated that it would take many years to reach the nearest star, Proxima Centauri, 4.25 light years away. However, today, some of Einstein's ideas are obsolete, great man though he was. It is now known, since the discovery of quasars in deep space, that there are tremendous energies to be tapped far in excess of the speed of light. I do not believe there is a limit to anything in God's universe. It's the same old story. Human beings seldom look beyond their present know-how. They put frontiers to knowledge. Everything outside those frontiers is impossible. Scientific opinion at the time said it was not possible for a heavier-than-air machine powered by an engine to fly. They said it was aerodynamically impossible. Even while scientific articles were being written stating that it was impossible, the Wright brothers flew their little aircraft at the Kitty Hawk sand dunes. I am sure that men of other worlds have discovered long ago the means to travel from planet to planet, from star to star, and from galaxy to galaxy. We are only on the verge of space travel, and we have much to learn. Today, as you all know, spaceships from other worlds, flying saucers, as they are popularly called, are to be seen in our skies. Have they visited this planet before modern times? The answer is most certainly yes. There are records all through history, and also we have stories coming back to us from way long ago in the folklore, legends, and mythologies of very many countries all over the world, telling us of the visits of godlike people who came down from the skies. I will go even further and suggest that humanity was originally put here by the sky people, which would explain their consistent interest in us down the ages. In two of my books, Sky People and Forgotten Heritage, I describe to some extent how humanity came into being and later became crossed with extraterrestrials. I postulated that the human race was descended from this crossbreed of galactic and animal man. The galactic races of man were created long before humanity. No one knows when galactic man was created. This is an event lost in the mists of antiquity. Now, the galactic races have from time immemorial been known as the dragon or serpent people. This possibly stems from the fact that in very ancient times we had a different North Pole star to Polaris, the one we have now. This was Alpha Draconis in the constellation of Draco, meaning dragon. Flying saucers have often been seen coming from the north, and their occupants were known to the ancients as the dragons or serpent people. Here and there in ancient cultural relics, and here and there in cultural fossils still in use in our own time, there appears the ancient symbol of the serpent and the concentric figure we call the sun. The serpent has been made the symbol of many concepts and ideas, which is the reason for its present great importance. Primarily, for one thing, it is a representation of the two major arms of the spiral galaxy in which we live, and is therefore the symbol of galactic civilization, as well as the sign of the great creator. It was a seal of the serpent kings, who are said by old cultures around the world to have come from the sky to establish the beneficent and civilizing rule of the sons of the sun, or the sons of heaven upon earth. The sky people have often come down to earth and talked with human beings. It is remarkable how many royal dynasties in countries as far apart as Egypt, China, Japan, Peru, Mexico, and others have been started by someone who originally claimed to be an extraterrestrial. In my book, Men Among Mankind, I postulated that in very ancient times, when we were in open contact with sky people, that there were two rulers, one an off-planet one, and a secular one on Earth. This dual system of rulership continued symbolically in ancient Egypt, down to the time of Menish. There was a priest king who claimed descent from an extraterrestrial and a secular one who was a man of Earth. The Maya people of Mexico told of a mysterious white man who came to them from the east. He had a high forehead and a flowing beard. His name, Quetzalcoatl, meant plumed serpent. Nobody saw him arrive in Mexico. He introduced better conditions and taught the natives many arts. He was against all violence. he is said to have finally sailed away in a canoe made of serpent skins. To the ancients, eastward was synonymous with sunward. Later, Quetzalcoatl became the chief god of the Toltecs. His images often depict him with the solar disk. Last year, as some of you know, I visited Japan and had a fabulous trip. According to the legends of the Ainu people, a very ancient race who live on Hokkaido Island in the north, there are not many of them left, but they are very wonderful, simple, and friendly people. Well, according to their ancient history, a man called Oki Kurumi Kamui landed at Hayapara in Hokkaido Island from the skies. He taught them the rudiments of agriculture and brought them sun worship. He told them that the sun was the giver and sustainer of life and was the outward manifestation and symbol of the Godhead. I have spoken to you about only a few of the galactic beings that have come to our planet in ages gone by in different parts of the world. Some people might say that the stories I have related are only legendary. Possibly so, but I doubt it. When you have so many stories coming down to us from so many parts of the world, and I have only given you one or two, then they must have some basis in fact. It was no less a person than Sir Winston Churchill who once said that to appreciate and understand the present, it was essential to have a knowledge and appreciation of the past. He was a man who really understood the importance of history and could apply that knowledge to coping with modern situations. Some of you may wonder why I pay so much attention to what has occurred in the past. But in order to understand what is happening today in regard to the flying saucers, it is essential and very important for me to give you the whole background. This is not just a modern phenomena. It is something that has been with us for thousands of years. The saga of the Sky People is something that we were well acquainted with thousands of years ago, and is something that we will be well acquainted with again in a matter of a very short time. It is, I repeat, most important for you to have the whole background, at least as much of it as I can give you in this short talk. In the presentation of my case for the existence of open contact between Sky People and the inhabitants of this earth long ago, there is actual evidence on this planet still existing and testifying that thousands of years ago, there was a great sun-worshipping civilization capable of building huge monolithic structures containing 200-ton stones, a civilization that was in open contact with the inhabitants of other worlds. In the history of this planet, there have been quite a number of global catastrophes, resulting in the sinking of whole continents beneath the ocean waves. A few relics of the lost sun empires of Atlantis and Lemuria are even with us today. A perpetual reminder to us of their greatness and the genius of their people, and also a constant annoyance to those scientists who still insist that there was no great civilization on this earth before 8000 BC. We have the Gate of the Sun at Tia Cuanaca, 12,000 feet up in the high Andes of South America, on the borders of Peru and Bolivia, with a most remarkable and precise calendar inscribed on its portals. Nearby are other ruins, also with 200-ton stones. There is also the massive platform at Baalbek in the country now called the Lebanon. On this platform, long afterwards, the Romans built magnificent temples to their gods. One stretch of the platform consists of three stones whose combined length is nearly 200 feet. No one has so far come up with the answer as to who built this amazing platform. Was it originally intended as a launching platform for spaceships, a kind of cosmodrome? Mark Twain, the famous American poet and writer who visited Baalbek, tells us that a quarter of a mile away is the quarry from which those colossal stones were taken. He relates how in a pit lay a similar stone. In his words, the mate of the largest ones in the ruins. What is more, it lies there, squared and ready for the builder's hands, a solid mass 14 feet by 17 feet and 70 feet long. What caused that tremendous block of masonry intended for the great solid platform at Baalbek to be abandoned, leaving the work unfinished? There is also the mystery of Easter Island. Who built those giant figures of men with long ears gazing enigmatically out to sea? Here again, there is evidence that the work had to be suddenly abandoned. Now, additionally, all over the world are strange, quizzical markings on its surface, which can only be seen at best advantage from the air. These are all of great antiquity, probably thousands of years old. In England, we have the Uffington White Horse. There are many white horses carved on English soil, but most of them appeared in the 18th century. However, this particular one on the Berkshire Downs is very old. Its age is uncertain. It is 365 feet in length. It is true that this figure can be made out from ground level due to its prominent position. But it can only be seen in its true perspective from the air. And I think it was meant to be seen that way. Most certainly, it becomes an outstanding landmark, showing off its true proportions from a very long way off when viewed from an aeroplane. A very interesting fact is that the white horse in symbology represents mind, the one quality that distinguishes man.
However, this particular white horse is more like a dragon than a horse. In this respect, it is different from all the other white horses carved on English soil. This is very significant, because the amazing thing is that Uther Pendragon, the paramount sovereign king of kings, the father of our famous King Arthur, is said to be buried nearby. I'm not telling you this is fact, but nevertheless, it is certainly interesting. And if Uther Pendragon is buried nearby, then we could ask, was the Uffington white horse or dragon a sign to other Skye people that it marked the burial place of one of their own? In any case, the Uffington white horse is a landmark meant to be seen from the air. Another landmark of gigantic proportions and is situated in the Glastonbury area, Somerset. It is an amazing example of prehistoric earthworks. I have discussed this at some length in my book, Men Among Mankind. It has been called the Temple of the Stars and occupies an area 10 miles in diameter. It depicts a great planetarium. The artificial earthworks and waterways reproduce a map of the heavens on the ground in the form of the signs of the zodiac. This fantastic discovery was made in modern times by the late Mrs. K.E. Mortwood. It was Mrs. Mortwood who traced the figures on the ground and arranged to have them photographed from the air. A casual walker would not notice anything out of the ordinary. They were meant to be seen from the air. Then, in Peru, there are the famous Nazca lines, of which no doubt you have heard. Hundreds of radiating straight lines discovered by two Peruvian airmen lying at 4,000 feet some years ago between Nazca and Pampa, Peru. Beneath them, on the sandy desert, they began to make out figures of birds and other designs, one of a man wearing a crown, and in addition spotted literally hundreds of straight lines. Unless thousands of years before the Incas people had arrived by air, which is highly improbable, this extraordinary network of radiating lines seems to have been missed by them completely. The fact that the Incas constructed their great coastal road straight through the pattern of lines tends, more than anything else, to indicate that this was so. Later, the Incas were plundered by the Spanish. Other people came and left, passing over the same area. Heaven knows how many times, yet apparently no one saw them. It remained for two modern airmen to discover them from the air. Curiously enough, these lines and figures cannot be spotted from a low hedge-hopping altitude. The full design only reveals itself from high in the air. A German scientist, Maria Reich, has made a deep study of the Nazca lines and states that the unusual climatic conditions must have had a remarkable preservative effect, because they are probably thousands of years old. I remarked earlier that several great catastrophes have taken place in the world. It is probably that one occurred about 15,000 years ago. This was quite likely the one that caused the Gate of the Sun at Tiahuanaco and the nearby Lake Titicaca to rise to their present position, 12,000 feet up in the high Andes. The distinguished scientist and writer, Dr. Emanuel Velikovsky, has expressed the view that catastrophes of such a nature cause mountains to rise up. The Russian scientist, Alexandra Kazantsev, visited the Gate of the Sun and Lake Titicaca. He found seashells and stated that the lake, seashells and other marine plants by the shore of the lake, and stated that the lake was probably at one time part of the ocean. I have already referred to how the work at Baalbek and Easter Island had to be suddenly abandoned. We have all heard, too, about the mammals in Siberia, some of whom were found dead in standing positions with refrigerated, undigested food of a more temperate zone inside their carcasses. The catastrophe, as you can see, must have struck people and animals very suddenly all over the world. For a long time afterwards, the world must have been a very difficult place in which to exist, let alone live. Then it seems there was probably another catastrophe about 11,000 years ago. That is about 9,000 BC. We have the testimony of Plato for that. Probably for a very long time, the bemused survivors eked out a very precarious existence. Mankind fell back, in some parts of the world, to a near animal state as a result of the terrible time they had been through. After it was all over, they had to start over once more on the long trek back to civilization. It was a long and gradual process. However, during all this time, the sky people have kept watch on this planet, and we have evidence of sightings of their craft all through recorded history. Although it is my personal opinion that they have given us some guidance, they have not impinged themselves or their culture upon us. I think there is a cosmic law that does not allow a more advanced race to force its ideas upon a lesser advanced one. So for a long time, because I think they put us here in the first place, and consequently had a deep interest in us and our growth, the sky people kept an eye on us and possibly injected an idea here and there unobtrusively. At this stage of my talk to you, I would like to briefly recapitulate the main points that I have made in my exposition of the UFO in our past history. I have postulated that, one, the collective races of man were made before humanity, two, that humanity became crossed with extraterrestrials and that we are their descendants, three, that the sky people were known to the ancients as the serpent or dragon people, and that this probably stemmed from the time before an axis tilt, when we had a different North Pole star, Alpha Draconis, and the constellation of Draco. Four, that at one time, in the period of Atlantis and Lemuria, sky people were in open contact with this planet. Five, after the catastrophes that caused an axis tilt and the sinking of Atlantis and Lemuria, sky people came down to Earth and talked to human beings, and I gave you some examples, Quetzalcoatl in Mexico and Okikurumi Kamui in Japan. However, I would also like to refer very briefly to the Holy Bible, which in my estimation is the greatest flying saucer book ever written. All through its pages you read of sky people. There is the famous story of the landing by the river Chebar, described by Ezekiel. Also the account of the three men who came to Abraham and also warned Lot. They were not spooks, for as you will recall, they actually partook of food with Abraham. Six, I then told you about some of the places on this planet, such as the Gate of the Sun at Tiahuanaco, Easter Island, and the massive platform at Baalbek. All three are shrouded in mystery, and no one knows their exact age. But quite definitely, they are remnants of a civilization capable of building with 200-ton stones, and incidentally, you can hardly put a knife blade between these stones, and building in a manner that with all our modern machinery and knowledge, we are not capable of emulating today. Seven, I then spoke of a few of the places on the Earth's surface where there are strange markings which can only be seen from the air, probably thousands of years old, indicating that the ancients were in open contact with the sky people. Eight, finally, I told you, and most of you know, from the works of Charles Fort, and from the researches of W.R. Drake, Desmond Leslie, M.K. Jessop, and other writers, that in the newspaper files of many countries, in the journals of learned societies, the archives of monasteries, and various bodies, there are records of what we now call flying saucers that have been visiting us all through recorded history. This talk tonight is rather an ambitious one, to say the least. To cover the whole UFO story, past, present, and future, in the short space of about an hour, is a sheer impossibility. So you must forgive me if I appear to gloss over some events and not give chapter and verse. There are plenty of books that will do that for you. I am just trying to give you an overall picture, as I see it, of the whole UFO saga. And it is bound to have some shortcomings. Most of you have studied this subject in depth, and much of what I am telling you now may be old hat. But I think it is useful to present it on a big canvas, and some of my ideas may cause some food for thought. So much then for the past. As you know, sighting reports of the saucers have been made throughout recorded history. However, the number of sightings was nothing like it is today. The occasional reports continued down the centuries into modern times until suddenly, in 1945, the situation changed. As you might say, overnight. The atom bomb was let off. Once we had unlocked the secrets of the atom, they knew we were on our way. Space travel would soon follow. We might also blow up our planet. So Since then, the Sky people have intensified their visits to an enormous degree. There have been, as you know, literally hundreds of thousands of sightings since the Scandinavian flood of 1946. A recent Gallup poll in the USA established that 5 million people in that country alone claimed to have seen the flying saucers. The saucers have been seen, as before our members know very well, over every country and over every ocean in the world. They have been observed by both military and civilian pilots, as well as by police, coast guards, and by people in every walk of life. Then, as you are also aware, they have been tracked on radar and photographed and filmed on numerous occasions. I'm not going to outline here either the classic or the latest sightings. This information is available in books and in flying saucer magazines. I want us all to think more about the implications of what is going on. However, I will say this. The technology of the Sky People is so vast that it is a simple matter for them to cause major power failures of electricity in the United States and elsewhere. On another occasion, flying saucers were over a Russian missile base. The jittery officer in charge gave the order to fire a salvo of missiles at the saucers. In fact, three salvos were fired. What was the result? The saucer occupants just stalled and put out of action the electrical apparatus of the whole missile base by means of their powerful electromagnetic force fields. No one was hurt. The authorities of the world have not announced the reality of the saucers. All they have done over the years is to consistently explain the craft away, calling them temperature inversions, reflections, the planet Venus, and so on, insulting the intelligences and damaging the reputations of the fine pilots who have reported them and know what they have seen and what there is in the sky. Many pilots in the United States now refuse to file UFO reports because they know what to expect. Neither have the authorities made any attempt during the last two decades to prepare the way and educate the public gradually up to an eventual announcement that the sources are real. It is true that a few months ago, due to public pressure, the United States authorities at long last allocated a sum of money, $300,000, not a very large amount for the job, to the University of Colorado, and a panel of scientists has been set up there, headed by a physicist, Dr. Condon, to investigate the subject. It remains to be seen whether this is just another stalling operation. Now I come to the future, which I regard as the most important phase of my talk. We are now in a period of violence. There is much trouble and unrest in the world. War in Vietnam, strife in China, war in the Yemen, riots in Hong Kong, possible civil war in Nigeria, and a very serious situation in the Middle East, which may ignite into a World War III. Crime and vice are on an unprecedented scale. And additionally, there is racial trouble in the States and elsewhere. At the same time, many spiritually minded people are being drawn together into good communication all over the world. This is of especial interest in these times, as although there have always been some spiritually orientated people in the world, I do not think that there have ever been so many as there are today. So you see, we have two extremes building up. In fact, in a sense, these two represent the wheat chaff. I pointed out some 7 years ago in my book, The Sky People, that these extremes were beginning to build up. However, they have gone on, to use a modern word, escalating, and there is a reason for it. I think this world and the solar system in which we reside are moving gradually through space to areas where we were becoming under the influence of another sun. As you know, cosmic energies are always reaching us. But these energies have for some time been taking on a more potent force. These energies are now going to build up even more. It is a cleansing process for this planet. These increased cosmic energies are causing us to either react violently or in harmony, in tune with cosmic law, depending upon the state of our evolution and our makeup. As I say, we have been feeling the effect of these energies for some time, and they will become more effective soon. I can best describe this strange situation by giving you an analogy. The world right now is like a dirty ink bottle, in process of being washed out with clean, pure water. All the dirty ink and muck from the bottom of the bottle rises to the surface while it has been flushed out. Soon the dirty ink, that is the violence, the crime, and negative way of life, will not be able to exist on this planet. Those who cannot exist in the clear, fresh water, that is, live with the new cosmic energy, now quickening us one way or the other, will have to continue their evolution elsewhere. It is my opinion, and what I'm saying is purely my opinion, this planet is being prepared for those who live in harmony and to take its place as a fully fledged member of the galaxy in open contact and communication with the inhabitants of other worlds. Now, I would like to make a few comments about another aspect of the subject. There has been a tendency of late in some sections of the flying saucer field to label some of the flying saucers as hostile or something approaching that classification. I fully appreciate that everyone is entitled to their own opinions. Let us take a look at the record. Saucer researchers know that there are reports of flying saucers visiting us all through history. What is the result? You and I are still here, breathing God's fresh air. Or at least what remains of it after we have polluted it. That is all very well. Those that support the hostile saucer theory protest. But what about the intensive observation of this planet now going on? That surely indicates an invasion from space is about to take place. It is true. The visitors have concentrated their observations systematically over every country, taking one or two parts of the globe at a time. They have closely studied fault lines in the Earth's crust, reservoirs, lakes, ancient sites, and indeed our missile and atomic bases have had their full attention. They have hovered over airports and observed our astronauts in flight. If the truth were really known, they have studied everything. Nothing has been missed. Everything and everyone has been studied in detail. Now, as the saucers have been seen over these missile and atomic bases and other military installations, some writers on the UFO have used these facts as proof that an invasion is imminent. I would like to point out that this intensive survey of our planet has now been going on for 2 decades. Actually, a shade more, 21 years, if we include the Scandinavian flap of 1946. Let us look at this situation with a little thought. That would be refreshing, because it seems to me that is just what is needed to blow away the cobwebs of fear and rash conclusions. If you had the advanced technology to wipe out this planet in the twinkling of an eye, would you spend 21 long years on an intensive military reconnaissance? I would not think so. The whole idea is quite absurd when you look at it in that light. I submit that the flying saucers do not have any hostile intentions towards the planet Earth. I would go so far as to suggest that they know only too well about possible coming physical changes on this planet, including a possible axis tilt. They know, as our scientists also know, that the magnetic North Pole has deviated considerably from its normal position, and that a large quantity of ice is gradually building up in the south in Antarctica, has been for some time. They may well have plans for melting the ice, I do not know. we do know that they have paid a great deal of attention to fault lines, like the San Andreas one in California. I think the reason for their keeping an eye on our atomic and missile bases is in case we aggravate a critical situation by starting a nuclear war. I don't think they want this planet to be destroyed. However, as I have earlier stated, I think they know, like our scientists do, that an axis tilt is on the cards. And that is possibly the reason for the recent phased power failures in the USA and other places. I will tell you why I think that. To recapitulate, you will recall the great power failure of November the 9th, 1965, in the northeast United States, when millions of New Yorkers and other U.S. citizens were plunged into total darkness. And soon afterwards, there was another power failure in the southwest United States. This, incidentally, I'm told, put the president's phone out of action at his ranch in Texas. There was also another failure in Mexico somewhere around the same time. On all of these occasions, flying saucers were observed hovering and flying along the power lines. My speculation is that these blackouts were deliberately caused by the sky people for at least two reasons. One, as a test of human behavior in an emergency when masses of people would be in total darkness. And if an axis tilt was to occur, it is possible that the sun might be blacked out and they wanted to know how we would respond. I'm happy to report, and you probably saw it in the papers, that there was no panic. Humanity passed this test. The only side effect was we found out later that the birth rate went up somewhat as a result. I think this was also a warning to humanity not to rely too much on material things. Now, those that support the hostile saucer school have also made much of the fact that there have been some instances where entities from elsewhere who have landed and been surprised by a human being coming on the scene unexpectedly have used some sort of ray gun to temporarily stun or paralyze. For example, we now know that this happened to Monsieur Mass, the French farmer who came across an oval-shaped craft on his lavender field in the south of France. There have been other cases of visitors hurriedly removing themselves from being seen by human beings. Upon reflection, can we be surprised by this reaction? We must realize that the visitors probably come from many areas, judging by the different landing reports and the descriptions of the saucer occupants. The more evolved ones and those that really have the interests of this planet more at heart would probably not behave in this fashion. But others are undoubtedly coming in too, engaged in scientific research. These are the people who have been seen taking away soil samples, siphoning water out of lakes, taking them home for analysis. Word has probably got round the galaxy that the natives on this planet are dangerous. After all, we're always fighting among ourselves. I don't have to rub that point home, do I? We've just had two terrible world wars, then the Korean one, now Vietnam and the Middle East may escalate into another. Quite apart from all the crime and other skullduggery I have already referred to, it is a sheer wonder that anyone from out there would wish to come to this jungle world at all.
Yeah.
How about looking at the overall picture a little from their point of view? Human beings always have a tendency, you know, to think that someone is going to attack them. Finally, on this hostile business, there is yet another school of thought that maintains that there is no need for an invasion by the hostile type of sorcerer, as they are supposed to have already taken over the planet and exist in bases on Earth, in places like Antarctica, the Himalayas, South America, and so on. This school of thought considers that hostile entities in the saucers that are occupying the Earth are influencing the minds of men and infiltrating among us for the purpose of encouraging us to destroy each other by war. I've had letters from Holland, Austria, and other places, besides having had talks with saucer researchers here in this country on this aspect. Well, it's a very interesting theory, but you know, it is an inborn trait on the part of many human beings to throw the results of their own actions. I'm not talking about their individual actions on regard to this particular matter, but they do pass off their own results of their own actions onto other people. It's true, but in this case, it's a question of pushing the responsibility for collective action onto others. I am sure that the state of the world today has been brought about entirely by our own negative and faulty collective thinking. I am certain that it has not been brought about by alleged hostile flying saucers based on this planet. It has come about by the collective human thinking on this earth, and we must all share collective responsibility. I know that we live in a world of dualities, good and evil, black and white, but we should try and rise above all this and realize that there is really only one force, and that is the power of light. In the limited world of human thinking, there are seemingly two powers, but they fuse into one when we rise above the dualities of the world. I believe we are approaching the most tremendous times, and that we are now living in the most exciting period in the history of this planet. I am convinced that the Sky People are only here to watch and alleviate any physical changes that may be coming. I do not think that they will make open contact with us unless invited to do so by a sufficient number of people. Then they might consider it, but the decision would be theirs. It is possible that they might intervene if we start a nuclear war. Again, we must not count on that. The decision would be theirs. However, I think the time is growing ripe for their return. In my book, Men Among Mankind, I finished up by writing the promise that the two separated brother groups will in time come together again has not yet been openly fulfilled. But the numerous sightings all over the world in recent times, in recent years, modern visions of celestial chariots may well foreshadow such an event. I think that promise is shortly going to be fulfilled. It will not be a hostile invasion on their part. It will be a coming together of long-parted friends. Meanwhile, if we keep in tune with our source, then we need have no fear. If we walk in the light, the dark will not affect us. It has long been prophesied that after the changes, a golden age will dawn, and once again we will be in open contact with our friends from the skies. So, let us all take higher ground. Then we need not fear any axis tilt or hypothetical hostile sources. But realize, if you don't mind me saying so, in the words of Psalm 46, that God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore will we not fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea. Thank you.